tune is not due within 3 minutes of the starting time, the whip and or somebody else, not and, or somebody else from the ANC will chair. So on behalf of the refusal of Derek Carnicom, intimidated as he is, and Dick Lady, I think on their behalf I apologize. They could have started at 3 minutes past 10. Secondly, I would like to stand. I would like to stand to say this. Where is the eyes? Yeah. I think the whole world should know, including the Germans, by the way, that Ismail Momanyat is human. And he does have a birthday. And he turned 60 on Saturday. Yeah. So can we applaud him? I would have sung the International, which he identified with before 1990, but I can't sing, so I'll sit down. And Mr. Mania will take me to the Constitutional Court meeting. But anyway, all good. And now I found out, Ismail's the only guy you can ring at 4 o'clock in the morning on a Sunday, and he'll take your call. So I rang him on Saturday, and then he doesn't tell me it's his birthday and he's with his family. He speaks to me for about 5 minutes, and I ask him, can we use the term financial subsector in our report? And he explains, well, it's not a common term which Zakhele is using in our report on the transformation of the financial sector hearings. It's a 90-plus page report, so it's coming to you on Tuesday next week if all goes well, because you have to debate it on the 6th. But it will be sent to the stakeholders. You'll all get it. As he says, yeah, we will send it to you, give you 2 weeks to respond. But look, congratulations. You turned 60, am I right?
Yeah.
Right. And so we wish you well. Now, colleagues, we have got before us the bill, and we would like, if possible, because we've been through this before, now almost all of us here believe that we shouldn't look at a bill and then not look at it for 3 months and then come back, because we obviously it's not productive. And there are a million things occur in between. And so I will confer with the Speaker's office, with the Chair and the Chief Whip on our side, that we have a concentrated period where we sit all day and deal with the bill. Now, the reason we got the bill here today is, unfortunately, our wonderful secretaries. It was a human error. It happens once in every 4,000 years. They didn't process the advert for the hearings today, so we had to slot in the insurance bill. But I'm negotiating in the next few days that we block off whole days and finish this bill. Our aim would be to do it before the end of the hot quarter. It's been lying with us. I've never in my own experience as a chair for how many years now, 1990, had a bill that has been for so long with us. However, the problem is that we often get other things to do, which we have no choice about, SAA, quarterly reports, and then some or other SOE or in our sector behaves badly, or public entity, we have to call urgent meetings. But really, we have to finish this bill. And so this will be our priority. Remember, we also got, let me alert members to what we've got in store for us, the Money Bills Act. We would like to finish it. We couldn't go ahead last week because of the PBO, International Conference, to which all members were invited and very few came. We've got the Rates and Monetary Bill with a very challenging HPL, or Sugar Beverages Tax Bill. We've got TALAB and TLAB. Then we've got MTBPS. So we will have to find more time. So one of the options is to look at meeting. We have been exempted, by the way. We can meet in the afternoons, but often if there's a three-line whip, it's difficult. So we will see how we manage things. But the idea is that we finish this bill. When is Parliament rising? End of November or early December this year? Sorry? Ah, 1st of, you know. Right, so before the 1st of December, we need to process this bill. The second thing to say, can I just on behalf of our committee convey our good wishes to Joan Phelps, which is what held me up. She's not well, and she's not around. and we really, you know, just note it and wish her well. Right, just remind me, Mr. Sender, send her later. Okay, can we start, Mom?
Yeah.
Where are we? Yeah.
So, the bill
Chair, I think we've got a big team here. I should just say that you may have heard that the Twin Peaks Bill has been now signed into law, or as Mr. Mania calls it, what did you call it? Okay, the death bill. Death is good sometimes. But say you don't want another 60 years. You've got to die sometime. But Chair, and just to point out that Jonathan, the bill has outlived Jonathan Dixon because he's no longer with us. He hasn't passed on. He's just gone off to Basel to be the Secretary General of the IAIS, the insurance, the Basel version of the insurance industry.
I think
it's a big thing. You should be proud of
him. I know people will raise the race issue and so on, but Joe Slova and Derek Carnico also write. And so I'm not interested in that, right? We will write. Right. Also, he's a very nice guy. And if you raise issues with him, he's got a very fast turnaround time. So apart from being very competent, you know, in this committee, and we're proud of him, the South African, we really like the way he handled matters. You know, you did hint to me, you know, at some stage, but I was waiting for it. Okay, we'll write him.
Yeah. No, we're definitely going to miss him, Chair. He does leave a big gap, and Caroline has stepped in now. He's doing the FICE job and the insurance, because they're in this difficult situation of the transition now to Twin Peaks,
yeah.
So it is a bit of a challenge there as well. But thanks to Caroline for stepping in. So, Chair, I think just to get on to the bill, if you just, we thought we'd just quickly go through issues that you've seen, because obviously it's been a long time. I think this year we've only looked at it twice. Okay. And so obviously the bill's been around from 2015, but the hearing started early this year, and we've had comments, and I'm going to go through those quickly. Go on to the next slide. So, Chair, so the last time we were here, we provided the detailed response to the public comments that we received, and they had focused on issues like transformation, financial inclusion, the cost of regulation, the powers of the regulator, technical amendments. And obviously, when a bill was published, the Financial Sector Regulation Bill had not been, in fact, was also in its early days just being discussed by Parliament. And so we had to do some alignment, and we sort of distributed the comment matrix. We've got a copy today as well. Okay, so we've given you a full pack so that you have everything before you. I think, Chair, just on the transformation issues which came up last week, we would like to say that they certainly deal with the issues of ownership, procurement, management control, and we've had a lot of meetings, for example, with the black-owned insurers and the panel beaters, because the whole issue of procurement, I think, is a big issue in the insurance industry. Particularly, I'm talking about short-term insurance. There's, of course, issues related around ownership. There's issues related to management, the financial sector charter targets. Are they tight enough? All of those are issues that we're looking at. And in fact, we've got processes like we've been talking to both the short-term insurance agency and the CISA. And in fact, what's quite exciting is that the CEOs themselves are taking some responsibility for looking at how to transform their sectors faster. So, but we thought that we should, in terms of clauses, we should come back to this after the 6th of September hearing. So we just like to park actual clauses, not the discussion, but actual clauses on this. Over. So I think when you look at our response today, what we do is, you can move on, we've talked about this. Just to remind members to contextualize the bill itself, there's of course phase one when of the Twin Peaks system, and this fits within the Twin Peaks system, which is to obviously establish the regulators, get your mechanisms working, decide who regulates what. And then there's a phase two where there's some laws that will come into being, like the coffee bill. But I would put this more as a phase one issue, because it's like Basel III in a sense, that we had to amend the Banks Act. We do have to deal with the Insurance Act. I always get confused between these phases. Am I right? It is phase one. Or is it phase one and a half? You know? Okay, one and a half.
But just call it phase one, right?
Yeah. So I think this just provides, says I was sort of right, just a picture. Move on. So, Chair, this certainly builds on the Twin Peaks model of financial regulation, in that we have the prudential supervision. Whilst it doesn't fully touch on market conduct, because a lot of that will be done through the coffee bill, it does, for example, deal with the issue of financial inclusion. It will deal with financial sector transformation. For example, it looks at the area of microinsurance, and I'll come to that, because it kind of provides a step ladder for small insurance companies to become big. It looks at the prudential safety and soundness issues. It maintains financial stability through introducing a framework for insurance group supervision. Remember, just like with banks, that there are banking groups, there are insurance groups, so we've had to legislate for that as well. And importantly, it facilitates alignment with international standards. I should add that for the insurance sector, it's, you know, your international standards often are not as developed as, say, banking. Okay, banking is the main one, just because it's the impact is, or countries are so connected through their banking systems. But with insurance, I mean, there's also differences. For example, in the U.S. and I think Canada, your insurance regulators largely sit in their states, not at a federal level. And only when they are supposedly SIFIs that they fall in at some federal level, if I'm not mistaken. Now, Jonathan's not here to ask, so Caroline, when you can, please answer. I think an important issue about the bill is proportionality and progressive realization. And we'll come to that later, because we certainly recognize that your small and emerging insurance firms need to be dealt with in a slightly different way, in an enabling way, and that the provisions, if applied, and you'll see those were some of the comments, but I think people don't see how the proportionality and progressive realization is taken into account, and we'll deal with that when we deal with the clauses. And of course, it is largely framework legislation, so that we're trying to legislate. So it doesn't try to legislate everything, and you've got to see it within the Twin Peaks framework. And understand where various pieces fit. So whether it's market conduct, as I said, there we will have the conduct of financial institutions bill. I know I'm sitting with a draft on that. Hopefully we'll get it published before the end of the year. And even the issue of transformation, I think one of the issues is should we not try and fix up the financial sector charter first? Because there is legislation. I think the issue is how and what. I think I've sort of said a lot of these issues. You know, it's your basic or minimum issues. You want to say these things, okay? I've said all of this, so if you can. Next one. Yeah. So, Chair, maybe let's just get onto the bill itself, because I think it does cover the big themes. You'll see the big team that's been working, and you'll notice that I'm not a chapter champion anyway. So you'll see that, you know, we have to deal with the issue of licensing, of governance, financial soundness, disclosures. Like in the Twin Peaks bill, we have to deal with significant transactions. We also deal with resolution here. So it's kind of pretty broad. And I think as we sort of went through the process of comments, you know, aside from the broad concerns that were there, I think what we tried to do is to show what the key issues are in each chapter. Now, Chair, you did ask me if we were dealing with themes. So these are the broad themes. Now, we can go through the chapters, but the other way to do the chapters is if we actually get into the bill. But I'm sure members would want to just refresh themselves and sort of ask more general questions. I don't know how you want us to take it. Otherwise, we can just deal with some of the key chapters. Like, we don't have to deal with definitions and so on at this point. But we'll come back to these as we do chapter by chapter.
You see, Mama, you know how we do this, right? We usually discuss the policy issues. Each party quietly comes to its views and then makes it easier to go through it clause by clause. I have to make a personal confession. Unfortunately, the notes that I've done on the policy issues are handwritten on the text I used the last time. It's not in my computer, so it's stuck in Pietermaritzburg. So I don't remember what we agreed to. What I want to avoid, colleagues, is to go through the policy issues again, simply because we had so many months in between. We just need to remind ourselves what we agreed to, and then say, do we still stick by that or not? Now, Antonia, I looked up to 10 to 10 for my notes, and then realized it's possibly in Msindusi, right? So where's Antonia? Ah, yes. Do you have actually an account? Zakhele, by the way, is excused because he needs to finish sections of the report that Joan and I felt he should redo. that's made it slightly difficult to launch into clause by clause. But once we get agreement on the policy, it makes it much easier, Momo. We can come to clause by clause in an hour or so. Can't we just deal with the policy issues, right? So can you highlight them, and we look at each of them, and maybe to facilitate that, we look at the chapters. What do members feel? This is the way we've been doing all bills, actually, well, in the committees I've been in. But if somebody's got a better alternative or doesn't feel the need to look at the policy issues, but deal with them when we come to clause by clause, I'd like to suggest that takes longer. Look, this bill is not as controversial as the FSR bill. excuse me. And the policy issues are far fewer. So we can finish it quickly today, in the next hour. Members got any alternative approach? No. Shall we move on the way we normally do?
Okay. Right.
Last time, some of the issues on transformation that emerged, the definitions, the object, you know, some of these were suggestions that were made. As I said, let's come back to these issues later, but I think you've got a sense for the issues that were raised on licensing, the 10th of May on slide 12, page 6. It says transformation of insurance sector. Honourable Shivambu had raised the issue of putting a percentage in the bill, for example, just so that fully disclosed here. Then, Chair, I think the big issue was financial inclusion through microinsurance. Now, currently, the biggest micro insurance industry are your funeral insurance industry. Do you want to just talk through that, Rashmore? Anyone else in the team?
So, the the concern that was raised from certain commentators was that the bill sought to distinguish between microinsurance and macroinsurance, and basically they felt that it was actually putting a barrier in terms of actually, you know, small insurers growing into bigger players in the market. But I think to some degree there was a misunderstanding, because what the bill actually seeks to do is in the main give effect to our policy document, which was released in 2011. And what it seeks to do is to lower regulatory barriers to entry so that we can facilitate access and support affordable insurance products on one hand, whilst at the same time ensuring that there is an appropriate degree of consumer protection in place. So what the bill does is it in effect provides for a dedicated microinsurance license, and it provides for other types of non-traditional insurance participants, such as financial services cooperatives or funeral parlors, which are currently existing outside the regulatory net. And they will also be kind of allowed for in terms of entering into the formal insurance market. Commercial insurers may also provide microinsurance type products, but this is optional. And the microinsurance license will facilitate financial inclusion through having these proportionate regulations, including capital requirements based on lowering the risk of microinsurance products from a prudential perspective.
Yeah, and I think this issue is important because, for example, when we talk to some of the members of the Black Insurance Industry Association, there were some members who thought this would condemn them to be microinsurance.
That's just why.
Yeah.
And they want to be the player.
And what we were saying is, no, this is just an additional mechanism. If you want to play directly in a big league, you can do so. But this is a step ladder to smaller ones to become bigger. But they also, you know, and we've done it more in a more general way to call them microinsurers, most of whom are, of course, the funeral insurance industry, which has the largest take-up in terms of numbers, okay? Not maybe in terms of premiums. Clearly, there's lots of market conduct issues related to that, so it is an industry that needs to be regulated much more, but appropriately so.
Can you deal with
issue by issue? It's faster that way. But on microinsurance, you heard the National Treasury. As I remember it, colleagues, what we were saying last time is we fully support transformation, right? But we also have to find the right balances. That, of course, we need to deracialize. Of course, we need to have new entrants. Of course, we cannot continue. It's unacceptable, the extent of monopoly in the sector. But at the same time, we have to protect the policyholders. And what usually happens if these financial institutions collapse, it's the poor and the lower income people that disproportionately bear the burden of that. So, you know, even the majority party, our main constituency is the poor. And we can't allow a situation where we create new strata and new elites at the expense of the poor. But at the same time, we can't use, as Treasury sometimes seems to do, I'm not saying this morning, that is an excuse that, you know what, look, we ought to be careful who, after all, are the policyholders. So both sides of the divide need to find each other. I say this because, look, right now, I got letters this morning, which I'm going to send to you, Momo, from the towing people.
Yeah.
They say nothing's happening, right? Then I got a letter, which we only got yesterday, from the South African Association of Insurance People. So I, by the way, before you think I was holidaying or sunbathing in the Pietermaritzburg beaches, I want to tell you, I spent something like 32 hours working on this financial sector report, and I'm warning National Treasury and the powers that be here. If you read it the way I did, in a concentrated way, it is remarkable what people are saying. Eh? The anger. It's not just, they're making sweeping statements. But politics is not about rational, simply, you know, mathematical, Momo. decision making. It's about human beings and where they are. We will not be pandering to populism, but we're not going to be pandering either to a rational, let's say, abstract logic either. That anger, you know, when you read it all at one go, I urge you, well, it's a lot of reading. It's the anger that comes out. It's something that stunned me, Momo, as I told you on Saturday. So, hey, we better wake up, eh? So I really think that we must defer the transformation issues until we look at that report. I know the DA is not going to like the report, and we have to deal with it, right? EFF will be reasonably happy. But we'll give you the report next Tuesday. It's about hovering between 80 and 90 pages. You'll have a whole week to look at it before the 6th. But really, I just want to once again alert members, more particularly, and the big players here, that we have to deal with that. And we have to start by processing that report, and then we can't leave the report hanging in the air. It must insert itself into this bill. And we must engage vigorously. Both sides. Right. So, actually, three sides. The MPs, the big players, and the small players. Right. Having said that, what are we saying about financial inclusion? I'm going to just send those two letters out, eh? The one from the Towing Association and the one from the South African Insurance Association. Okay, well, it was sent to me. Momo, I'll send them to you. All members should have it. And can you facilitate some dialogue, right? Further dialogue. Can I also say, by the way, I'm picking up that a lot of people are already meeting, prompted in part, not solely, by the hearings. Okay, let's move on. Right, on this matter of financial inclusion through microinsurance, any comments? I think we agree broadly that we're not going to ghettoize small players, that there's a step ladder, Momo, to becoming big, that we will engage, you and us, will engage with the black insurance players and engage with them around us. But their concerns are quite legitimate also. Fine. Anything here? So we're agreeing that the notion you have of micro-insurance. The only one question one needs to ask is if big players are also going to do micro-insurance, won't they marginalize the small players for whom you have made this provision? Cooperatives will also be included in micro-insurance, right? That's an important thing to say. You see, again, let's look at the different classes and strata in the black population. That we must encourage the emergence of very big players. All mutuals should be African-owned down the road. But at the same time, we also need to encourage cooperatives, Stockfels, and so on. So all classes and all strata of the African population and the black population more generally must benefit. You can't benefit the one strata against the other. So tackling white monopoly capital, as it were, has to benefit all classes and all strata of the African and black population. Right, let's move on. So on this issue, won't the bigger players marginalize the smaller players for whom this is mainly directed?
Yeah, I think, you know, the one issue always to look at, and even when we've met with the emerging insurers, is to say, you know, the first thing is nobody's got a right. You've got a right to have your company, but ultimately, you have to make sure that you're treating your customers fairly and your customers are getting a good deal. And in a way, customers are going to choose where they want to go depending on the product. So I think whether it's a big player or a small player, you know, how you protect the interests of the customer and ensure that a lot of the reforms, because certainly in the insurance industry, it's very hard, well, it's just as hard as when you save or even if you have a banking product, to understand what and compare products and charges. So I think that's pretty important, and particularly with insurance, you know, the customer may only find out at the time when they have a claim, when they have an accident, or when they, you know, when they reach a certain age and their policy has to pay, whether it will pay. And often this thing may be related to, you know, how much you've disclosed. You may not have disclosed things, that you're a smoker, and then, you know, the company finds out that has an impact, and so on. Now, you also want proportionality in those instances, and companies also not being lazy and just accepting premiums when they know that there's little prospect of paying out. Now, whether that's by the design of the product and often you have low claims ratios. You have, like with the furniture industry, when people were buying furniture with credit insurance, they don't even know that they're buying an insurance, and if something happens, they never have a claim. Okay, that's how the product is designed. So, but to answer your question, yes, the major players would also provide for products that largely the micro-insurance business would focus on, certainly in the area of funeral insurance. Now, that's a competition that emerging players are going to face. So how they compete, I mean, it will impact on them, but how they compete is perhaps the issue. But maybe, Caroline, I don't know if you want to come in.
So I suppose it goes to the point, Chair, that you were making earlier about getting the balance right. So the micro-insurance proposal is not just about enabling new entrants into the market. It's also about enabling access to products by the wider community in such a way that the product standards will be set, that they protect the customer, the disclosures will be proper, the distribution costs will be more cost-effective, that there will be innovation and distribution. So it's about both accessing of the policyholders to the industry as well as creating new entrants.
Anybody wants to say anything? Can we get some help? Because, we're deciding on policies. But maybe we've covered this ground a lot, right? The only thing I want to ask you is a blunt question, which is, can't you exclude the big players from microfinance?
I don't think any big player is going to want a micro-insurance license. They already have a license that can provide whatever products that are allowed. Okay. The issue is more that the micro-insurance license is taken up by small players who want to sell certain types of products. It's the way I understand, yeah. But maybe just say...
Larger insurers can actually apply for a dedicated micro-insurance license. So that business will be ring-fenced. And the reason why the policy framework accommodated commercial insurers was that, going back to Caroline's point, I mean, insurance penetration in particular segments of the market is particularly low. And how do we actually solve the broader challenges of financial inclusion? How do we design a regulatory framework that kind of, on the one hand, ensures that there's consumer protection, but also brings down the cost? So distribution costs are generally high. Under a conventional insurance license, the capital requirements are quite high. So how do you actually ensure that you have a ring-fenced business with lower costs but appropriate consumer protection mechanisms and insurers providing product into that lower LSM market? The focus traditionally with the bigger players is to supply products into the middle and upper LSM markets. And I think this has been an issue that we've been trying to engage with industry in terms of how do we actually serve the needs of the lower LSM more generally. So the financial inclusion challenges are important, and we're hoping that the microinsurance vehicle will be an instrument to enable the bigger players to also get down into that lower market and supply appropriate products to serve the needs of the lower income groups.
Rationale for it would be big players must also deal with lower strata, so it's financial inclusion. Yeah, that's an interesting point. It could also be seen as a rationalization, of course. I don't know, members. We're not getting much guidance from the members, and then they'll complain I'm talking all the time, right? So, fine, I'll talk, because nobody else wants to. I don't know, it's a Tuesday, not a Monday. Usually Monday, people have Monday blues, but in Parliament, I suppose, it's a Tuesday blue. But you know what? We need help as chairs also, so I hope members will come back to this. But you see, there's another thing. Why can't... You know, I'm actually now... You can see I'm very influenced by what I've been reading over the last 5 days. I'm overawed by... You know, when you read it at one go. Why can't... Is there a possibility of saying that we're big companies are involved in microfinances? Let me just throw out mad ideas, but then they can be converted by technocrats into something that's sustainable and legally sound. Why can't we say that where they do that, A, they should ensure that there is partnerships maybe with emerging players in this field. Can you say that? Or will it go against the Companies Act and people's constitutional rights in the free market system? Frank, are you listening? Frank, where are you?
I'm listening.
Yeah, yeah. You know this thing, we can't carry on like this, Frank. Can't carry on like this. The way we're going on, you know, 23 years later, we need to deal with market concentration and monopolization. And really, this is, we are overhauling the entire financial sector system. So this is the opportunity MPs have to do it. If we lose this, when are we going to do it? So, and those of us who've been here from the pre-1994 era, we're on our way out. So let's finish our responsibilities. So what I'm saying is, can you apply your mind? Do you see what the point here, Derek, is? Microfinance will hopefully serve as more very vividly puts it as a stepladder, right? For small companies, and then they'll have, you know, licensing conditions, presumably, I don't know, we'll look at the bill, and they will have, like, other benefits, so to speak, that are less demanding of them, considering microfinance than the big players are, to give them an opportunity, while protecting consumers. Now, the thing is, they're providing also for the big companies to also do microfinance. And they say the reason is because the big companies cater for the better off, and they must also reach out to the marginalized and the poorer good. But they will, because they can also do microfinance, they will marginalize the small emerging players, right? Because they'll be able to offer better rates. They're in the business for over 130 years and whatever. So what I'm saying is, okay, if there's no choice, big players must also do microfinance. Is there something we can do to require them, for example, to, in microfinancing, do it cooperatively or in some way with an emerging player? That's all I'm asking. Now, I'm not naive. There's the Companies Act, there's the Constitution, there's the free market system, the powers that be will go to courts, and so on. So basically, I'm asking about that. I will invite Sahih and so on to comment in a moment, but that's where we are. Oh, just to tell you, Derek and Peace, we in this committee, this is the way we operate, right? We allow people to speak till the day we vote on a bill. So anybody can come here and speak, within limits, obviously. And the problem we have with that, as we've repeatedly said, guess who comes, obviously? The big players. The small players are not going to come here. So the big players tend to disproportionately influence the outcome of, you know, the inputs, but they don't influence us. Because ultimately this committee is very strong. It takes its decisions. It recognizes, right, that the big players are far too involved in the parliamentary process, and we can't allow that. And they themselves know it. We hear them, and then we say, no, thank you. So, but we allow them to speak. So that it's like a what parliament for some of us is meant to be, constantly engaging with the people and the stakeholders, except stakeholders that come up primarily. Is there anybody here from the black insurers? See, nobody. So I'm just telling you, we will allow them to speak. It also gives us a better idea of where things are.
You seem to know who is here, but I don't.
Yeah.
So why don't we get a sense that
would
help us?
Yeah, okay, maybe Peace also doesn't know who's here. Yeah. The rest of us, we know them. They've been here. They're here every day. Every day their bills are here. They are here. They seem to be camping just here in the gardens. Yeah, fine. Can we have it over to you?
Yeah.
Introduce yourself.
You asked us to stop you when you're
talking. Yeah.
Yeah,
but the thing is that, you know what, you guys are not helping. That's the main point. If you were, then, right, fine, over to you.
Rosemary Lafferty from ATHESA.
From?
ATHESA, the Association of Investment South Africa. But we represent the insurers, well, most of the insurers in South Africa, and one of the four black insurers who visited as part of the hearing. We also represent the investment managers, most of them, and the collective investment leaders. So we do not represent short-term insurance or banks.
They've got a separate association.
Yes, a separate association for short-term insurance and this would be the banking association.
But you're an association, you're not
we are an association, no. My colleague and I, we work and a number of other people, obviously work exclusively for the association. not for one of the players.
Not only for the big insurers, also for smaller
insurers. Smaller insurers, yes, definitely. We have a number of smaller insurers, or many smaller insurers. Most of the insurers do have insurance licenses for contract members. Also smaller asset managers, smaller kind of niche collective investment companies. And our board is represented to take pains to have smaller players on the board.
You'll see in the report that
coming to you next week, it sets out many of these structures. Yeah. Who else is here from the stakeholders? So that's the issue. Can the members of the ANC apply their mind to that, right? You're saying at this stage you don't think it can be done, or you're going to apply your mind. Can we do something?
Sorry, are they the only stakeholders?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. But the point is, we need as an ANC study group. Sorry. Yes. Who else is here? Oh.
Chair, my name is Adira Bodasingh. I'm from Polarity Consulting. I'm not representing any stakeholder directly, but I do report. I am reporting on this bill for other players in the financial sector. Wonga.com, the Lewis Group, who are following this bill.
Fine. So basically that's the issue, right? We're just leaving it in your hands to think about it. Can we do something to ensure that big players, when they do micro insurance, create space for smaller players? Can you apply your mind to that? Right. And the ANC study group needs to meet at 1 o'clock, okay? Briefly for 5 minutes. Okay, having said that, can we move to the next issue, cost of regulation?
This is
the mania's big issue.
Yeah. So, Mr. Chair, the issue that was raised was around the powers that we asked for to do a capital add-on. And that's where we have concerns around the company's risk profile. So one, if we are of the view that the capital requirements, that is a standard formula, so it caters for most insurers but not all, doesn't adequately capture the risk of that insurer, so the type of business they do, or there's significant weaknesses in the governance structure. But just to note, the capital add-on provision is the last resort. I mean, that is if nothing else could have been done to fix up the problems that supervisors we pick up in the insurance company. And I mean, we would not do that lightly, and it would be done in discussion with the insurance company that we want to add the capital add-on. And it's also not a permanent capital add-on. It's an add-on that one would review often just until the stage where things are properly fixed. We can then relieve on the capital add-on. So that's the one thing. But maybe just, if I may, you know, capital for insurance companies are needed to protect the policyholders. And due to the nature of an insurance company's business, its balance sheet is based on assumptions, because they don't know who's going to die when or when a natural catastrophe hits them. So capital is needed to buffer those unexpected events or when the assumptions and the reality doesn't line up. So therefore, capital is needed. And then we do have a minimum capital requirement of 15 million rand for mainstream insurers. For micro insurers, we do have a capital requirement of 4 million rand. But our requirements say that a micro insurer entering into the market can start off with 1.5 million rand and progressively build up to 4 million rand over a period of time. So that's the minimum floor, but then we also got a solvency capital requirement which calculates the risk profile of the insurer. So it's based on the risks the insurers are exposed to, and these various shocks that we apply, so that that's the solvency capital requirement that's needed for the insurer to protect its balance sheet and ultimately protect the policyholders. That's the main aim.
Right. Any questions?
The colleagues?
Yeah. Derek? I'm just complying with your instruction that we must also...
I'm
joking. Shh. We let you go on and on. Okay. I mean, clearly a minimum capital requirement is a pretty obvious requirement of anyone in the insurance game. But my question is really to the chair, I suppose, but related to this. You've got a capital requirement for the bigger insurers of 50 million, and is it 4 million for the smaller emerging insurers, if you like? And this, sorry? 1.5 for entrance, okay. Okay, which is not a huge amount of money to go into this kind of business. So the question really, because the chair has indicated that he's been engaging with emerging insurers or black insurance companies that are trying to penetrate the market and grow, it seems that is not a major chairperson, that is not a major entry barrier. And so what would be useful if instead of hearing but they have legitimate concerns, for us to hear what is the concern and what is it that they would like to have changed in this bill in order to allow them to grow? So it's a bit like getting down to the specifics. What are the barriers to growth? What are the barriers to entry? It seems the barriers to entry are not enormously high. But then there seem to be certain impediments that get in the way of them growing. And that is the perhaps, I don't want to say an uncompetitive environment, but possibly an unfair environment where the market is dominated by the bigger insurers. It's very difficult for a small, but that applies to many other sectors, obviously. But in this case, you've got challenge in front of us is to say, how can we equalize things? How can we create opportunity? So therefore, it would seem to me to kind of clinically diagnose it and say what stands in the way and what can we change by way of this legislation in order to, rather than just these generic comments, what is it that we can change in this legislation that would remove some of what could be obstacles to growth? But then we first have to identify what are these obstacles to growth. Thank you.
Because you were not here, understandably, you're raising that. They have actually, if you see the matrix, we're dealing with the you will see they have got concrete proposals. They actually ask for amendments here, there, and everywhere. And you'll see it when the report comes. So you're in peace because you're not around. It's a reasonable thing to say. We're not speaking. You see, the way we're doing this is dealing with policy issues now. And once the different study groups are clear on it, then we will look at their concrete things. But as far as your general observation of the policy things, I want to agree with Derek, right? That if you're allowing entrance 1.5 million in a sector like this, I agree entirely what he's saying, and even 5 million. The question they have asked, they've got very concrete proposals. They don't speak here in general terms. You'll see them when we look at it. What they are calling for is actually, which is really something not in the finance sector specifically. They're calling for a fund to facilitate them, in the case of the 5 million and so on, getting it. And that is one of their requests that they've got in the hearings. So they do suggest that. The question I want to ask you, 1.5 million entry doesn't look a lot. But if what would be your response to people who say, well, the 5 million or whatever it is you're wanting as a precondition, that's a bit high. And has there been any discussion in the finance sector or in government of assistance with startups in the financial sector? A fund that gives you the money at a lower interest rate and that sort of thing. They're requesting it, by the way.
Yeah, so I will defer the fund question to Mama to answer, but I would like to answer your 1.5 million minimum capital requirement. So currently it's 10 million, our current requirement, and we also benchmarked it against some of the neighboring countries, and we are... Botswana's got a very low one at the moment, but they've got legislation in Parliament to up that. Ghana, for example, their minimum capital is 42 million rand. Kenya is 51 million for life companies and 75 million for short-term companies. Nigeria is 83 million for life companies, 125 million for non-life companies. Zimbabwe is sitting at 27 million for life companies and 19 million for non-life companies. So, you know, our 15 million is still, for most of the African countries, lower than that. The other comment that I would like to make is that if a company, I mean, we do have the ability to give people transitional arrangements. So if they're not meeting the requirements, we can, on a case-by-case basis, allow them to build up until a point under certain conditions and monitoring. So we do have the powers to do that if a company do need it. And particularly around the four black-owned insurers, in the technical calculations, there were one particular calculation that did added some capital to them, and that was the mortality risk catastrophe event. So basically says if there's a natural catastrophe, you must assume more people die than normal, or if there's a pandemic event. And we re-looked at that calculation, and we changed the proposals. It's currently out for informal consultation, which will definitely give them a significant relief on that particular element of the calculation. Because we realized that they mainly write contracts that can be changed quickly, so they can change the premium on a monthly basis. And then the calculation was done on a one-year period. Sorry, I'm getting a bit technical here. So we tried to accommodate that, and it will definitely bring them some relief on their capital. So we keep on continue working to see where we can't assist them, but still with having the policyholder protection.
On the matter of a fund, is there any prospect, any discussion? Specific request.
Chair, I think, you know, if you look at banking and insurance, you do, you know, my worry is, are the amounts not too low? And now to have a fund to support, because you've got to have people who put skin in the game. And frankly, there is some level of sophistication in the sense that it's not anyone who can just come in. They have to be hopefully fit and proper. They've got to have, you know, so I really don't think that these amounts are onerous. And, you know, we haven't got any fun in mind.
I'm merely representing their case. They're not here. But Saya and Asisa, it's not fair. So I'm telling you what they say.
Yeah.
Right. Fine. We hear you. Yes, please.
Yeah, maybe just to add to that, why we need the capital is that if something goes wrong, that policyholders are actually looked after. And that's why it's so important that that capital is unencumbered. Otherwise, policyholders stand the furthest back because we don't have a policyholder protection scheme yet, and we don't have an insolvency preference. So it is important that there is cash basically available that can get people's cars fixed, get people put in, you know, have funerals, etc., immediately if something goes wrong. So I think it's to stress as well, in terms of the capital, it has to be unencumbered capital. At the moment, the ownership is funded through a loan. It complicates matters because then basically the bank will stand before the policyholders if something goes wrong. So I don't know if I'm explaining myself badly, but...
Yeah, fine. Okay, look, the question then is also, they raise this thing of to protect something else that will come up. Colleagues, just think about this. A depositors fund. Something to protect people who get retrenched. Even for the miners, thousands of people are losing their jobs. And then the banks just take their thing. So a similar thing has been raised also about insurers, but we'll come back to that. I'll note that. So will you help, because Zakhele is not here, Antonia, just note some of these outstanding policy issues, right? We will take it to our respective study groups. Okay. Having said that, can we move on to the next issue, please? Good. Right. The next one is alignment with the Financial Sector Regulation Bill. This I don't think you need to go through because we'll go through it, right? Then the significant revisions per chapter. Here you can... Are those the only policy issues, so to speak? Right? Now, the revisions are based on the public hearings we had on this bill. Right? Take us through them very quickly. Yeah.
Chair, I just want to confirm, I mean, one of the policy issues is transformation of the financial sector.
Yeah.
Did I understand you correctly to say that you want to park that debate until after the 6th of September?
Yeah.
Okay. You know, I also there are things, I've read the bill, at least up to page 15 yesterday. They are very straightforward things, which we can tick off today, instead of holding us back. They're nothing to do with baseball, like definitions and so on. So, you know, we need to move to that reasonably soon. So let's do this last tranche of discussion, general discussion, which is to do with the changes you've made. Right. So who's going to go? Right. Thank you.
I'm getting old, so I can't
see well on the screen, so if I can use my computer. So basically in Chapter 1 we've made quite a number of changes. So in the long title of the bill and the objectives clause, we've specifically referred to the Constitution. We continue to maintain that it's not necessary to do so because the Constitution applies to everything, but there was specific representations made that that might be valuable to have that. In terms of microinsurance, we've added the classes of business that microinsurers can write. We've expanded that to also include agricultural insurance. In terms of reinsurers, it was basically also representations made by reinsurers to say that they should be able to conduct business directly with the medical schemes, which we considered and feel comfortable with. In terms of state-owned insurers, there's been a number of amendments throughout the legislation to better address the state-owned insurers. So we've removed the criterion that they must be established under an Act of Parliament, but in the licensing chapter we have put in certain requirements that the Minister of Finance must authorise them to do insurance. Section 3, which is objectives of the Act, we've amended that to explicitly recognise the constitutional issues as well as a transformation in the sector, similarly to we did in the MSRP.
Any questions, your colleagues? Yes, Mr. Mania.
Chair, can I just slightly abuse this opportunity just to get clarity on the whole question of state-owned insurer? In the original bill, I believe it was in clause 5, 7, A and B, there was a provision which I think appears to have been deleted, which would have given the minister the option to exempt state-owned insurers from certain provisions without the concurrence of the PA. Now, that provision I think has been deleted. But what is the position now in respect of exemptions relating to state-owned insurance? I've just lost track of that. I wonder if you could just clarify.
Yes, we have proposed to delete the provision that would allow the Minister of Finance to exempt them from the legislation. So the state-owned insurers will be treated the same way as any other insurer, privately owned insurer. They could apply for exemptions, but there needs to be just cause for an exemption to be granted. So that initial proposal we've decided to remove.
So they now?
Yeah, they will apply to the Prudential Authority for exemption, similar to anybody else. So that special exemption power has been removed.
I'll tell you what we said with the FSR bill, right? The ANC's view was that we mustn't genuflect. You don't just put transformation into objects and the unsubstantial provisions in the content of the bill. Just to alert you to that, and you have already started doing that. Yeah.
So as I go through, I'll also highlight where we have made
fine. Good. Right. Next, chapter 2.
Chapter 2 is basically just conducting of insurance business and insurance group business. So we've removed the requirement that reinsurers must secure the approval of the Prudential Authority to conduct business outside of the Republic, which we think is reasonable. Just following the state-owned insurer issue has also been addressed in that chapter. And I think it is just to re-emphasize that all insurers must be treated equally, irrespective of who owns you.
Fairly straightforward. Should we pass this? Because there's nothing here,
okay, colleagues,
that we will not be able to proceed with when we... See, the idea is the only policy issues in a broad sense.
Okay.
Where there are specific amendments that we will deal with in a moment, that's fine. Okay, let's move on. Thank you. Any member can interrupt me and say you want to hold things back, right? You want to have a say. Sorry. Yes. Yeah.
I just want to again just be absolutely clear that we're parking the transformation policy issue and we'll have an opportunity to address it at a later stage.
Yeah. When we go through clause by clause, you can say to me, Eunice, this is not on, it has transformative implications and so on. We know what you're going to say, but you have a right to say it. Okay? Good. Right.
Okay, that's not the same as policy issues. I mean, those are clause by clause.
Yeah. No, look, what we're doing right now is to remind you, we're doing what we always do. At least I don't know any other way, and I asked members, do you have any other way? Nobody accepts. We look first at the policy issues. Then the study groups go off and come back with positions. Makes it much easier to move through clause by clause. However, in this specific context, because we've got the transformation of financial sector paper, etc., we want to go through that first. Then we want to actually insert some of those things. Through engagement with SAIA and all of them here, and here, the department, into the bill. But those things will be parked off. But there are some very straightforward issues, believe me, Mr. Mania, that we can adopt, and you'll see as we go through it. You have a right, like anybody else, to say, no, let's park this off. whether it's transformation or any other broader policy issue. Good. Right. Can we come back to you, my friend? Yeah.
So on chapter four, there's not policy issues, and I'm not. But we have, maybe just to highlight that we have made an initial attempt to address the transformation issues in the bill, and this is one of the areas where we have made a concrete proposal that on licensing, that a person needs to be able to demonstrate that it has a plan, and then that creates a positive obligation on the prudential authority to monitor implementation of that plan. Financial soundness, none of those are policy issues. It was basically just to strengthen our oversight of branches of foreign reinsurers and Lloyds. On reporting and public disclosures, no policy issues. It was basically just a clarification of certain matters. In terms of the administration of the Act, one of the themes that that the Chair raised in May was also the powers of the Prudential Authority. And I just want to highlight that the FSRB, or the Financial Sector Regulation Act now, basically affords the mandate and gives the power. So a lot of the issues in this chapter we need to see in the context of the fact that powers have already been granted. But what we have done here is to make re-emphasize that the PAJA applies to all decisions, and that where prudential standards are being made, that we have specified additional criteria that must be considered by the prudential authority. And then we have included an exemption provision. And that was also basically necessitated in terms of how the FSRB had changed over time through the committee process. And then just in terms of the Schedule 1, we have made a few amendments there to make sure. So Schedule 1 basically amends the Long-Term Insurance Act and the Short-Term Insurance Act. It will still remain in place, but only the conduct of business pockets will remain in place post this bill until we have the conduct of financial institutions bill in place.
Okay, good. Right, can we move to the bill itself, or is it the title? Right.
Accident. Any comments? Why does it also have to be violent? You say it means an external violence.
Sort of the dictionary definition of it, and it is also the definition supported by the short-term insurance industry, and the context in which it's used is specific to a specific class of business, which is accident and health, and it was important for us to be clear about what the term actually means, so that we can ensure that only non-life insurers write that, and that they don't write things that's not accidental issues under that class of business.
Comments about the definition, colleagues? Nope, I'll take it unless people interrupt that we are moving on, right? I'm still not clear why violent, but presumably I'm not going to pursue this further. Why does an accident have to be violent? If I am I understanding you clearly? Let's say I bumped my car against a lamppost, and then I go to the insurance. Is that the kind of violence technically? That's violence. A little bump.
No, it's violence. So there's even
an interpretation that if you have a house breaking, for example, and if you have a house breaking,
yeah,
and there's no visible, enforceable entry, but the entry was violent and that it was not permitted, that even that kind of thing would become...
Technical term, it's the way the insurance industry works. Who am I to question it? But it's nonsensical, right? I mean, for an average citizen, yeah.
So it's external and violent and unexpected and visible, or no odds.
Oh man, I have my problems declaring, but it's fine.
Right, ancillary own funds. Right, here, what the members want to say. Very quickly, do you want to, for those who haven't had a chance, especially new members, do you want to quickly say what it is, in fairness to the new members? Half of us are new here. Oh, by the way, Tandi explained, by the way, for the she can't make it, she'll be here this afternoon. Pule Mabe may or may not remain a member of this committee. We're still working on that. Who's missing? That's it. Yeah, 3, 4, 5, 6. There's a seventh member. Don't we have a... No. Six. Right. Okay, let's move on. Oh, Pinky. Yeah, Pinky is somewhere in the world. All right, next day.
Ancillary...
Is it, sometimes I think the definition is best to come back to last.
Yeah, I know. You
are a unless there's big issues there they want to raise, because otherwise we get into the policy issues anyway.
I understand that, but this one, to ask it straightforward. The next one, the ancillary own funds, that's quite complicated. So why can't you just explain it in another way? Well, what is what I did read it last night, but, you know, anything I'm battling. But look at members of our new year in
particular. So ancillary own funds is not capital that's on the balance sheet of the insurer. But if there's a need or there's a stress event and the insurer needs to call on the capital, it can. So it's normally where its parent issue a guarantee to the insurance company. So if there's capital needed, they can call on that guarantee.
Yeah.
That's what
okay. Straightforward. I, that's what I understood. I just wanted to hear you. But the question I want to ask, Momo, why do you want to hold this? Hold this. You don't want to adopt this. You're saying, this one's fine. So we're ticking it off. Antonio, can you please help me, right? We're ticking off stuff, right? Okay, next thing. Remember, the new members need to know this. When we say we're approving Peace and Derek, it's temporarily. When we come back to all the policy issues and all, often 90% of the temporarily gets approved, but 10%, we suddenly say, no, on reflection, having finished the bill, we're coming back. So no, nothing stops you from coming back right in the last minute and say, no, on reflection, I think we should review this. Associate, that's straightforward. Any questions here?
Just on the process issue, I mean, as a new member, we have marked here a number of proposed amendments to the bill that was tabled a long, long time ago. But now we're going through every definition. Is this does this mean we haven't done so before? We haven't gone through the bill before? So,
clause,
yes.
Okay, so we note the changes, but we're going through everything.
No, we haven't approved them. We will do it now. Okay. Remember, we have the matrix next to us, right? The way we work, peace and gotcha. We have a matrix here. Every clause that has got an amendment, if I miss it, Antonio will say no. So-and-so said this, so-and-so said. We're very concrete here, Derek, to come back to your point. We actually, you see here, Derek, peace. You will see we have this matrix. We insist on this, right?
Yeah.
So it will have every clause and every submission made, no matter how banal you think it is.
Yeah.
People have a right to be heard, even for us to say no, thank you. So every clause has got an amendment. So we look at it and say now. Now, associate has got a proposal there. You have to deal with that. You know how it works. You've been in the committee before. You will tell us what's in the bill, what's the amendment, your response, and then we'll decide what our response is. Good? Right, move. Thank you. Associate.
You get the trust, Eric? Good, thank you. Right, now over to you, my friend. Associate.
So the definition basically just informs when certain approvals is required, and as well as to how a group is constituted and who may be part of designated as being part of an insurance group.
We're talking about
associates. Yes, so the definition is important so that we can do certain things in the legislation.
Now, what were the objections to it? It came from Norton Rose Fulbright. They're basically saying they will define us as having the meaning not set out, blah, blah, blah. You got it?
So it is our view that incorporating other pieces of legislation or other clearly defined documentation through reference into a piece of legislation is not unusual. It happens a lot. So we disagreed with his comment.
Due respect to Norton Rose Fulbright, I'm surprised they raised this. This is what we've been doing since 94 and so on. But nevertheless, I think we agree with Treasury unless people feel otherwise. So we're sticking with associate as it is, right? For now. Right. Next point is auditing profession. Surely that's straightforward. Can we tick that off? Auditor, straightforward. Basic own funds.
Yeah, so basic own funds is actually when you do the solvency calculation of an insurer, it's assets minus its liabilities. And what remains then to cover the capital requirements is then known as basic own funds.
Any questions here? No? Can we approve of this? Good. Board of Directors is straightforward. Colleagues, can I just ask you to move on to the next one? Branch of a foreign reinsurer is straightforward. Any questions here? Nope. Right. Captive insurer. Now, please explain.
So So captive insurer in our market is where a group of companies form an insurance company that only underwrites the risk of that group. So, for example, SAB has got a captive, Eskom's got a captive ESCAP. So that insurance entity only underwrites the risk of the group, and they do need to form an insurance company to enable them to reinsure the risk into the wider market. So it's not dealing with the public, it's dealing only with the risk of the group itself. So Eskom's captive will insure some of the power stations, all part thereof.
Any comments here? No? Can we approve of this? Good. Colleagues, I've just got a message via Alan. The Speaker's office and the Chief Whip from the ANC have asked that we all finish shortly before 12:30 because there's a memorial service, I think, for our colleague, comrade that died. Where is it? Old Assembly, presumably. Yeah. Okay, so we have to finish a bit earlier, Momo, unfortunately. Okay. On the cell structure, is there anything you want to say? Can we park this, please, man? It's quite a complicated definition, right? I'd like to ask colleagues to the cell structure, and the cell captive insurer. I think it's right, but can we just hold on? So I'm not going to approve of it, right? Because I think we should be given some opportunity. Okay, so we're not approving now. Commercial lines is straightforward. Can we approve that? Companies Act is straightforward. Control is straightforward. Control function. Right, there we are. There is an objection to control function by Ernest & Young. Right, so what is it and what's the problem?
So they wanted the definition to include additional things, and we felt that so for instance they wanted to say that we should define it as saying a control function includes a system of control functions. You'll see that they made a specific drafting suggestion, and what we wanted to achieve by the definition is just to say that if you see the word control function in the legislation, it means one of these four things. And each one of those things, in the prudential standards, we will say what that function needs to do. So they wanted to put a substantive term or a substantive requirement into the definition, which we disagreed with.
By the way, you are welcome to speak when you want, right? On the policy issues, we would like more discussion first. Then we'll ask you, the particular question we want to direct your attention is, do you have any ideas on what can be done to ensure the micro-insurance, that's the main issue, includes emerging partners and that you don't dominate them? That's all. Think about that, come back to us. Okay, but you're free to interrupt, to put your hand up and say you want to say something. All right, fine. Where are you? As far as I can see, you're right, but I don't know what other colleagues feel. So can we accept you for now? Okay, good. Controlling company is straightforward, right? But it has to be located in the Republic.
Yes, so I think for the scope of this piece of legislation, the insurance groups that we define is basically up to the holding company in South Africa, which means that we can touch them directly.
Yeah, fine. Okay. Corporate effect is straightforward. Debt event is straightforward. Anyone, I'll comment on the debt event. It's very strange for an average layperson to read that sort of stuff, but there you are, you're the expert. Direct is straightforward. Disability event. Ah, there's also a comment from Atisa. So you'll speak for yourself while they go. Right, so you agree. So there's nothing to say. But do we agree? You two can agree. You don't have the power. Parliament must decide what it wants to say. So, on disability event, what do people feel? Right. In the absence of
anybody saying anything, I agree with it. So, you know, we're going to agree. Okay, the next thing then is encumber. But before we get to that, there's what? There's discretionary participation features. Yeah, explain this, please.
So, it's in the life insurance space where people can take out a policy and they can share in profits of the insurer, or they get bonuses added to their benefits that they've got. So that's done annually or biannually,
yeah,
depending on the terms of the contract. So the policy holder share in the profit of the insurer.
Any comments, your colleagues? Nope, I think it's fine. Shall we just accept it for now? Antonio, if you've got any comments, please speak, right? Any views, Antonio? Good, let's move on. eligible own funds?
So there was the definition of basic own funds, which is your assets minus.
Yeah, and this is the layout. We get the drift here,
and
right? Straightforward, colleagues.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't think you need to explain unless members have a problem. Nope. Right. Encumber.
So there was a comment from Sahir, basically having a concern that the definition would have too wide, wide an application. In the response, we just explained that the definition is only relevant to two sections, and that the fact that it is very wide is intentional, because in the circumstances, in Section 29, we do even want an operational lease to be included. And the sections basically provide that we... an insurer is having financial difficulties, that they cannot encumber any assets without the approval.
Do you say anything, Sahir? That's all. You're happy with it. Good. Let's move on.
We accept that then. Financial institution is straightforward. Financial sector conduct authority is straightforward. Financial sector regulation act is straightforward. Cross-party list.
So I think, as Suzette explained, so for instance, a captive insurer that only insures its risks, and that's first-party risks. So it's only all the risks arising in respect of that group. Why we needed to define it is that we also have another creature, which is a self-captive insurer. And a self-captive insurer is basically an insurer, but it sells preferential shares to certain parties, and they make that a little cell. So it's actually a little baby insurer within a big insurer, and then they have lots of ones. And currently there is a difficulty that they insure first party and third party sell business in that. So for instance, Edgar's insures its own risks, but it also insures third parties, its clients. And that causes a difficulty because it's an unhealthy conflict in that situation. So the definition is there. There's one for third party and first party, so that we can impose a requirement to say you can't write first and third in the same little baby cell.
Okay. Any comments here? No? Right. Next is business. Frank, where are you, Frank?
I'm here.
Yeah, you're going to intervene when you're finished.
Yes, thank you, sir.
Right. Fit and proper requirements. I don't think there's anything there, actually. Colleagues, can we just accept the page? I'll let you know. We'll come back to us later. Right. Foreign branch and insurance is straightforward. Foreign reinsurance is straightforward. Governing body is straightforward. Group of companies. Any comments from anybody in regards to these? It's straightforward. Right. Group of companies. Right. I think that's straightforward. It's a definition. Some of these are definitions of definitions and some are drawn from other sources. Right. So that's the issue. Then, of course, it's straightforward.
Basically just so it is important to draw a distinction between a disability event and a health event. So we had to define health event, and one needs to read it with disability, because going forward, non-life insurers, short-term insurers, will only be able to write disability or health, and disability only if it results from an accident, because the skills and knowledge that they would require in terms of writing disability, not associated with a violent event, we feel that going forward they shouldn't be able to underwrite that. So that's the definition has a very specific purpose.
If you could just to help us understand, give an example of an event. It says means an event relating to the health of the mind or body. Give us an example of such an event relating to.
So you do find these rare disease policies. So if you've got a heart attack, an insurance company will pay you 40,000 rand. Or if you're diagnosed with cancer, you get a lump sum payment.
Yeah, just so that you're also clear. Remember, you've got definitions in the medical schemes, and we've now just introduced the demarcation between medical aid type products, scheme type products, and as opposed to like those hospital plans and so on that you would have. If something happens, then they got to pay you. They can't take into account your state of health, etc., etc. So it's different.
I mean, I don't want to get. I hear what you're saying, what you're referring to, but just not wanting to be pedantic, but when it says means an event relating to the health, I would have thought it's an event affecting the health rather than relating to. You can go to, you know, there are all sorts of things that relate to your health rather than affect your health. Just
no, because we're not going to come back to these unless we have to. So what do you say in reply to that? I know in legalese, Derek, they like these words, you know, like relating to and so on. So what you will find is, I've been one of the people fighting for colloquial language and simple English and so on, and you often finally decide these are the terms they in the industry use. But respond to Derek, Mr. Honeycomb, please.
So my only comment, Chair, was that the definition would not only relate to things affecting your health, which could be cancer or brain disease, but you could be hospitalized, and therefore you're hospitalized as a result of a health event, and therefore can get, so it relates to.
Good question, Derek, surprisingly. Insurance business. Right, yeah, is there any question? I don't think there is. Not even Derek's going to come up with a question. Right. Insurance group, I think that's straightforward. Insurance obligation, somebody raised it. KGA Life raised the objection. First tell us what this is, then tell us what they said and why you said what you said in reply.
Sorry, sir, if I have to read them, it's just we did the matrix a long time ago, so we need to refresh every time. And we weren't sure that we were going to go through the matrix today. But the issue that they raised, that they felt that how we've defined insurance obligations includes certain activities that is termed intermediary activities, which is regulated under the Financial Advice and Intermediary Services Act. And we just explained that we don't think that the definition actually includes those intermediary services. The definition relates to the obligations of the insurer towards its policyholders.
Any comments here? Can we hold this 1 minute? Because there is some case they have, and I'm not going to plunge into just adopting it, right? So can we hold this? I think we come back to this, right? So L means later, right? So I'll put L, yeah, come back to this. Okay, insurance policy is straightforward, right? Insurer is straightforward. Now, this thing, I forgot about this now. What about Lloyd's, and you explained why Lloyd's has to be there. Just remind us quickly.
So Lloyd's is a very unique structure. It is it's an insurance market. So it itself, Lloyd's, it's not an insurer. But what it does is it creates a platform where a lot of other insurers can function. And they do play quite an important role in South Africa and in all Commonwealth countries. And we do feel that role should continue because they do underwrite very unique risks, massive risks. So even in the U.S., they have a similar dispensation as what we've currently have.
In other bills or acts elsewhere in the world, do they refer to Lloyd's?
Yes.
All right, fine, we're stuck with this. I personally don't like it. I think many of us in the ANC don't like it, but we're stuck with it. Floyd Jibamba didn't like it, and we agreed with him, but hey, we'll have to live with it. Good? So can we move on? Right. Interrelated is straightforward, right? Intergroup transaction, explain.
Intergroup transaction, this particularly relates to insurance group supervision. And that deals where companies lend or borrow funds to each other, or there's outsourcing arrangements for which fees are paid. And while that's important to us, particularly the intergroup capital, is that we want to make sure that there's actually excess capital in a group available. Because a group can raise capital in a holding company, put capital into a subsidiary, that subsidiary lends it to another subsidiary, and that subsidy B lends it back to the holding company, and then if you actually do the sums, there's not free capital available in the group. So therefore we need to define intergroup transactions so that we can monitor that and get reporting on that.
Any comments? I think that's fine. Can we approve? Good, right. Then joint arrangement. Yeah, that's Freinman. Key person. Have you left out anybody? Seems fine. I don't know what members want to say, but I think it's fine for now. Life event. Oh, man, this is a killer definition. Dickelady, look at this life event, right? It says, a life event means the event of the life of a person, A, having begun, B, continuing, or C, having continued for a period. Oh, man. But here you are. Explain. It's surrealistic almost.
That's why we always say the insurance sector is very unique. You know, like we love these things.
And Chair, I guess what they're doing is they're also consolidating the long-term and short-term insurance act. So I would presume some of these things are there already. Or?
Yeah. So life event is an existing definition if you go to the long-term insurance act. But it is also important to be able to, so if we talk about a life event, that everybody understands what we mean with it.
Let's see others. I mean, we'll use it, but hey. Sorry, Mr. Mania.
Just sort of given the sort of general tone, when has a life, in fact, begun?
So the nocturne asphyxie rule do apply. The court have pronounced as to when a life has begun. So it would include an unborn.
There was a man from Perth who was born on the day of his birth. He got married on his wife's wedding day and died on his last day on earth. That might help you.
Very good, Derek. Let's move on. Life insurance business. That's the important colleague. The life insurance policy, at least all people have a problem. Okay, explain what the issue here is. Or you agreed with them,
right? I don't know. Every time Asisa raises something, you guys agree. So now we're going to get terribly suspicious here. Fine.
It was actually a mistake that they pointed out. So, yeah, we made and they pointed out and we just made the correction. Because what we had moved needs to apply to A, B, and not only to B.
Yeah, when I read it last night, it did occur to me they have a case, but I just want the committee to be clear.
It's an important point you raised. Being the industry, they would obviously read the law pretty carefully. So you have to differentiate between mistakes and no policy issues slipping.
Yeah, I know. I'm just needling.
No, even for us. We do.
Okay. Can we move on?
Just again for understanding.
Yeah, sure.
I mean, you've accommodated the a proposal, am I right? You say you agree to it and you agree to amend. But other amendments that you've made are marked on the copy that we have are marked in red so that we can see amendments very clearly. But here you've got nothing marked in any color as an amendment under life insurance policy.
No. No, so if I could just apologize, because what we had done before is we've when we came in, our friend of mine, we gave a copy of the bill that had comment boxes on it.
Okay.
So if you look at my version, there is a little comment box that box there to explain. But the chief said that because of the comment boxes, that the font reduced and that it's difficult to read. So that's why the bill that we handed off today, we only showed the track changes. And I must apologize that we didn't need to then highlight that one.
No problem.
But it's correct to what
you raised, Derek.
But there was a font problem.
But you see what I'll tell you, what's the problem again? I refuse to do this, and people can say what they want. I don't care. I worked on this document last night, right? In the early hours of this morning. Then you give us this document. So I refuse to look at this, because who's going to transfer the notes? My copious notes, 2.5 hours work. I'm not going to do that. So once again, I want to plead with you. Send these documents in time. Even your policy stuff, I got it when I rolled into Parliament this morning. So really, I'm not looking at this document. There's only one document I've got. Now, tonight, I would like one of you. I want to give you this and transfer. Why must I waste my time? No, there's no debate about this. Because really, it's unfair on me. It happens all the time. As a chair, Derek, I'm forced to read these things.
Sure.
It's not local government. Let me...
Let me, I know passion.
No, no, I know, but look, to be fair, if I was a backbencher, I'm not sure about it.
So those two documents should be exactly the same. If it doesn't have, if one have coming boxes.
This is the original bill without the amendments. I've got this you yesterday afternoon, right? Our wonderful secretary again. Right? And then I worked on this in the earlier this morning. Now this one comes, I don't look at it. So Derek's able to pick those things up. But Derek, I will spend not much time, about 45 minutes, and transfer all my notes onto this.
Sure.
So the next time we meet, which will probably be in February next year, I will have transferred everything.
Good, let's move on. I'm glad Derek is understanding, for once. Right, can we move on, please? Where are we now? Life insured? No, we're on life insurance policy. I think we're agreeing on this at this stage, right? Then can we move on to the next one? Life insured. This is straightforward, surely, colleagues. Right. Lloyd's, right, fine. Lloyd's underwriters, fine. Let's move on to page 10. Micro insurance business. Has anybody said anything about this, colleagues? Yeah, then somebody has. Who's this PGC? Yeah. Right, firstly, what's there? What has PG said? What's your response?
Okay, when you read this definition, you also have to read it on against all the classes, right? Which is on page... Okay, I won't say the page.
Can we read this for now?
Table 1. At the
yeah,
back.
Let's read this for now, right, in advance. But just tell us very quickly on a broad policy level. We're not going to...
Yeah.
Right. Don't put it.
Do you want to explain it?
So the PGC group is what was on the slide, where we said that they felt that the microinsurance framework is impeding transformation. And I think we have positioned that as a policy issue. So we still feel microinsurance is important and that its primary objective is access.
Sure, right? Yeah. I think we will meet with them, right? You see, you've met with them. I will arrange a meeting between some of us and the black insurers at some stage. And we may, if there's time and opportunity, we may call them here one day and say, look, guys, this is it. These are the issues. There's some misunderstanding. Many things you've said we've done, some things we can't do. So at some stage, let's look into that. Microinsurer is straightforward.
So can I just so we did propose an amendment in the 10th of
yeah.
May
yeah. Yeah.
To add agriculture.
Yeah, we're going to come back to that. Good. Okay. Can we go on to microinsurers? Anybody said anything about that? No. Eh? The next one is non-life. Antonia, you'll if I skip anything, you'll come and tell me. Microinsurer is fine. Minister, please, yeah. Non-life insurance business. Anybody got a comment here? It's straightforward, it seems to me. But then somebody has raised something. No. No, it's on life insurance. What's the next one? Life insurance business. Yeah. Okay. Then the next one is non-life insurance policy. Explain that, please.
So a non-life insurance policy is basically that covers risk. So what traditionally would fall in that is motor policies, household policies, etc. So the definition basically just tries to say that. So the definition basically just tries to say what would a non-life insurance policy be.
Yeah, now why are they objecting? Who is this? There's somebody here, PTY Limited, what is it? Yeah, they're unhappy. There it is on page 11.
It's quite a complex comment. So currently, if you look at the Long and the Short-Term Insurance Act, it sort of blurs the line between indemnity products and non-indemnity products. And what we are trying to achieve through this piece of legislation is to be very clear what is non-life and what is life, what is indemnity products and what is not indemnity products. And the complaint is that before, so currently they can write accident and health in the short-term space, but under accident and health they write everything, disability events, etc., and it creates a lot of difficulties because they don't necessarily, according to us, have the right skills and expertise, similar to what you would have in a life company where they underwrite life risks and non-patrimonial or non-indemnity issues. So the complaint is that
going forward, once this bill is in place, short-term insurers or non-life insurance companies that currently under the accident and health class write a lot of things will be limited to actually what they can write. So certain things they won't be able to write going forward. And my reading is that this is that they complained about that. So we did also try and explain exactly why we feel that that is actually an important part of this bill, is to make sure that we better distinguish between indemnity and non-indemnity products.
Alan, have you sent this matrix to all the stakeholders? So in other words, just to alert the two new members, we engage with people. Sometimes, depending on the bill, we even send it to them before we vote on it for them to comment, right? No other committee does that I've known. We've been doing that since 1998. So what we also do is we send them the matrix. And in theory, these people are well-heeled enough to respond. They've got emails and so on. Very few people respond. Normally we get a thank you note. So we continue to engage till the day we vote on the bill, right? So these sometimes the DA, interestingly, when it's COSATU or it's one of the civil society, they get upset that they are sitting there. Then they will say, yeah, you see the ANC, it's subject to the Communist Party and COSATU and all. Then we remind them when big business is sitting here like now, they don't object, right? But I think the people have calmed down now. That's the way Parliament should operate. He will deny that he says that, right? See, that's what he says, right? What about the profit and finance? Let's not bore Derek, right? How upset you guys were when COSATU sat here right through. Right, let's move on. Right, what's next, colleagues? Official website. Derek, any objections?
No.
Oh, I'm pleased about that. Thank you, Derek. Operational risk. I think it's fine. Anybody got an issue? No. If you do, you'll come back. Now, outsourcing, explain.
We basically just said, so the FSRB includes the definition of outsourcing, and all we're doing is just aligning.
Oh, you've taken that same definition. Good. Right. Then we got a person, that's straightforward. Personal lines, that's straightforward. Policyholder, any questions there? Premium.
So there was a comment.
Yes. Faiya.
Yeah, so we've specifically provided under the definition of policyholder that it would include the successor in title, and they objected to that inclusion. So we just explained that we feel that it is important that the executors of estates, etc., is recognized as being the policyholder and entitled to certain rights then under the policy.
Any comment? You're fine.
Good, let's move on. Premium is covered.
Premium is an important thing. Can we look at that carefully, please? Explain.
A lot of current supervisory difficulties have informed the definition that we have proposed. Mm. Because a lot of times people say, oh, something, it's free insurance or it's subsidized premium. Or so what we wanted to make very clear is that the definition must cover any direct, indirect, partial or fully subsidized consideration to be given. Because the moment if a premium is not paid, the transaction doesn't constitute insurance for common law purposes and then also falling squarely within this piece of legislation. And we have seen a lot of abuses where people get free insurance. You know, a lot of times, for instance, if you have an 8 years account, you think you've got your funeral cover of 5,000 rand, etc. And if they position it as free, and even if we feel there is consideration paid, it's a huge discussion if this is actually insurance and subject to all legislation or not. So we were very bit elaborate in terms of what we wanted to include to make sure that those transactions fall within the protections afforded by this Act.
Look, man, can I
suggest that we hold on to this one, man? Because, you know, I think we should... Sorry? Because this thing becomes so controversial in the real world, eh? But what is a premium? I paid my premiums. There's no harm. Let's hold this thing. Right, your technical definition may be fine for now, but when we process the bill, we want to come back to it. But if the majority of you we should approve of it, it's fine. I can come back to it. No one stops me later, like any member of this committee. So I would suggest we leave it, but if you feel it's fine, we can approve of it, and then any member can come later. So what do you want to say, colleagues? Yeah, I think we should come back to it. Yeah, but let's come back to it. Good. Prescribed is straightforward, right? Even Mr. Mania will agree. Right. Then prudential authority is straightforward. Prudential standard is straightforward. Public company is straightforward.
Prudential standard, just a language thing, I would say. You say means a standard that should be lowercase. The standard.
What is it in the bill? I took it in the bill, it's in a capital S, but I think he's right if it's a small s. Yeah. All right, fine. Can we leave that to you to decide? Okay. The next thing is public company. That's straightforward, colleagues. Regulatory action. Can we say that's fine? Good. Regulatory authority. I think it's fine. Any members got any comments here? It's reasonably straightforward. Remember Frank Jenkins, colleagues, the new colleagues, our brilliant, outstanding lawyer, also goes through these things, right?
Yes.
Right. So reinsurance business means? Right. Can you explain that, please?
So a reinsurer basically insures insurers. And what we wanted to make sure that in the definition of reinsurance business, that we cover reinsurers that's located in South Africa, but also recognize a reinsurance business done by entities offshore. And the reason for this is that we want to, so currently we have a problem that our current legislation is not clear enough that transactions in respect of offshore reinsurance is also deemed, so if somebody flies in from Switzerland and comes and contract here and then immediately flies away, our legislation currently creates a little bit of a gap because it's not clear that that transaction is actually also subject to this piece of legislation. So we want to make sure going forward that you are either a reinsurer licensed here or you are a branch of a reinsurer and you're registered here. And that the suitcase brigades that we refer to it won't be able to function here. Yeah. That they can't operate. You come legit, or you don't. You can't come and solicit onshore.
Okay, any comments here? I take it this is fine. Good. That's reinsurance business and reinsurer. Obviously, our aim is not just to look at what you say. To see to what extent the words you have in the text match what you, related is straightforward. Related person is straightforward. Rider benefit, what does that mean? And there's a comment from KGA.
So a rider benefit is sort of something that's added onto a policy. And a lot of times it's just a small little thing that's added on. And the reason why we want to allow for rider benefits is, for instance, if you have a life policy, that we could allow the insurer to provide emergency medical evacuation as a rider. And why we call it a rider, because instead of then saying the insurer needs to be authorized for both a life class of business as well as a liability class of business, that because it is small and ancillary to the primary objective, which is to insure your life, that it can provide that without necessarily having to meet all the requirements that would apply to being able to conduct liability as a primary class of business.
Does anybody have any comments here? So are we going to accept this then, right? Okay. Quite a complex thing, this thing, eh? Fine. Securities is straightforward. Senior manager means. Have we covered everybody? Right, I think it's fine, colleagues. A significant owner is straightforward. State-owned insurer is straightforward. Third-party risk is straightforward. This act, obviously. Winding up, what's this? Anything you want to say here?
So we've just aligned it with what's in the FSRB, and it's basically the resolution part, winding up is insolvency.
Right, general interpretation of the Act, I think that's straightforward in the first 2.1a and B. But then, let's continue. On sub 2, questions, comments? Yeah, somebody had a problem with the use of international standards, am I right?
Yes, so
and you've got to amend it, right?
So we have to write an amendment, yeah.
Okay, how can I tell? Because I can't, on the version I've got. Let me not rub it in, but I will continue to do it because it never changes with finance. The net of treasury. Okay, B. You say subject to 3A, if there's any inconsistency between any provision of this Act. Yeah, this is straightforward, colleagues. It simply says what is almost a norm, isn't it? So I think 3 is fine. Is there any comment on 3? Sub 3? No. The Center for Legal Applied Studies, that's Section 3 they're talking about, right? So, 3, colleagues, 3A, B, seem fine to me. Four, can you explain what four is quickly? Sub four, yeah.
It's basically just a way another piece of legislation confers. So, for instance, if it's a Competition Act, a Competition Commission, that where it impacts on insurance and insurance business, that there's an obligation that they should exercise those powers in consultation with us.
It's also fine. So we'll adopt it as is, unless we come back to it and say, now this next one is simply definitions for the Companies Act, right? And you've covered all the necessary definitions, okay. Sub 6.
So going forward, we are allowing for a number of legal forms for insurers. We recognize that cooperatives can be there, but we do want the protections afforded in the Companies Act to apply, even if you are a cooperative. So that's what that subsection tries to do. It's basically just saying that it applies to you as if you were a public company in the Act, to the extent that it can actually apply to you, and to the extent that that Act applies to a public company. So public company additional protections, you know, like in terms of public offices, etc., we would want that also to apply, and the auditing requirements.
Would be you saying that if the companies, you're saying in B, sub B of 6, right?
So that's basically, so we want the Companies Act to apply if you're a public company.
Yeah.
But being a public company, it does mean that certain disclosures need to happen. And there was an objection to that, that if you're a private company or cooperative, should you really have make certain information public. So what we've said there is that we, the Commissioner or the Companies Act, imposes an obligation on a public company to do public disclosures, that public disclosure obligation does not apply. We wanted just the other protections. Public disclosure is addressed in the bill as well in terms of what insurers should be disclosing, but that might be something different.
Any comments, your colleagues?
I think it's fine. If people are agreeable, we can say yes for now. So 6, we are adopting. 7?
7, basically, so a lot of times in the bill we require something to be published. And this basically just states what would be appropriate be regarded as published. And we've actually borrowed or built that provision from the Companies Act, which has got a similar provision.
Fine. Anything here? I think it's straightforward, colleagues. It's the modern era. Right. Objective of the Act, sub 3. Clause 3. There is something here from CALS.
So we have proposed a number of amendments to the section to take into account CALS's comments, as well as the PGC group's comments. So we have included a specific reference to the Constitution to say that the objectives of the Act is to, in a manner consistent with the Constitution, promote maintenance of fair and stable insurance markets. And then we have specifically included under a new D, which promotes transformation of the insurance sector, which entrenches that objective then as part of the insurance bill.
You've agreed with the Center for Legal Applied Legal Studies, and we in fact insisted you do, as I recall it.
Yeah, so we've addressed their comment as well as the next comment from the PGC group of companies on the transformation issues, including it in the objective there.
Right, colleagues, we're on page 16 of the matrix, right? Yeah. Now, you see, the thing is that the sub 3 you've got to transform, that is actually in the bill. And that's good. It's not just like an object and then you forget it, right? But I want to draw attention to this, right? You start with 3A. You say, 3, you say, the object of this Act is to promote the maintenance of a fair, safe, and stable insurance market for the benefit and protection of policyholders. So in other words, your immediate aim is to protect policyholders. I think that's correct, actually. And you're enhancing the protection of policyholders. Good. Now, I want ANC in particular, but all members to think about this. When we talk of transformation, we talk of the comprehensive fundamental restructuring of power relations, right? Too often, transformation gets reduced to simply creating a new class of big players. That is correct, that there must be a new class of big players. But again and again, must come back to this. Not at the expense of the poorer strata in society and the lower income, who are disproportionately African anyway. So we need to find the right balances. And it struck me last night that this is actually also transformation, colleagues. I think we must discuss this in the study group, really. This is transformation, to protect consumers and policyholders. Obviously, there are many well-to-do fat cats like me, right? Not about me. But the people who really matter are the many, many people who are actually swindled, with due respect to the people, I would think, by the insurance industry. So this is transformation too. Yeah, but when people talk about transformation, they're like, it's a bean counting. Yeah. No, I think that's not but. That's a matter that we must address in the ANC. I just struck me last night how transformative this bill is in many respects. Can we move on then to the next issue, which is, look, you say here, also your aim. See, again, colleagues, can we just look at this bill, the objects, right? It also talks about increasing access to insurance for all South Africans. That too is transformative, because many strata have been excluded now. And contributing to stability of the financial system benefits all of us, but again, if you look at 2008. So I think in our debates in Parliament also on this bill, we must talk about what transformation means and its many elements. And I think that's good what you've got here. And then you've added other stuff, right? So what I'm trying to say to you is that when you added the other stuff, you talk about transform to address historical and achieve equity. So you have now balanced it out, right? Because you're talking about the policyholder in general, but obviously who does it refer to? And I think we can look, comrades, colleagues, at enhancing this as well. So I would like us to leave the objects for now. I think it goes quite a long way, but I think when we finish the bill, we might want to strengthen this section. So can I suggest we come back to this, as good as it is? Nothing stops us from making it even gooder. Okay? So I plead that clause 3 we don't adopt right now. Let's move on to clause 4, the principles. Anybody said anything in the matrix about the principles? Let's see. Nobody on clause 4, right? So can we look at what's there, please? Look, given the crisis we've had in 2008, and given what we know from anecdotal evidence, and given what we heard in the hearings on this bill and the transformation of the financial sector bill, can we actually strengthen the obligations on the insurers and controlling companies beyond what's there? People get away with, is there such an expression, blue murder? I mean, look at even the lower middle classes in Europe and, I mean, in the U.S. They've never really recovered. Just think of poorer people. I think we should strengthen that, colleagues. I don't know what people feel. Can we look at that as a policy issue for all study groups? I don't think we should adopt this either. I think we need to strengthen it. Anybody got any views for now? But do we agree in general that we need to strengthen that?
Since you're saying that, I mean, it would be useful if you said to strengthen it in what way, because I think it's these are broad principles. I don't see the need to strengthen it. If you do, then we'll park it.
Yeah, no, I mean, the thing is
I can't find all the answers, obviously, as I'm sure you'll agree. But I'm saying let's strengthen it. I'm pleading with the members to think about it. We've got quite a while till November, mid-November at least. Okay, the next one then is Section 5. Yes, you want to say something, Mr. Mayor?
We have been in the part of trouble.
It's fine. Chair, I agree with you that I'd like to park the principles. A policy issue that I haven't thought about and which I will do and come back to the committee is the whole question of, I mean, if there's an obligation on the prudential of on insurers to deal with the prudential authority in an open and cooperative way, but there's no obligation on the prudential authority to behave in an open and cooperative way in respect of the insurers. And one policy issue that I'd like to check, given our experience of South African Reserve Bank's method of operating, and is it Section 33 of their Act in respect of transparency? One question that we ought to look at is the levels of transparency in respect to the prudential authority. Something I'm interested in, and I'll look at and come back to the committee.
Can I raise this? That was dealt with in the FSR bill, but nothing stops us from coming back to it, and you're entitled to do it. I'm just alerting you that that's where we should have put it, and I suspect we did in some or other way discuss it. But fine, you can come back to it. Yes, Joy?
So I just want to sort of add so Section 4 is those overarching broad principles, but the essence of this whole piece of legislation is to do exactly what you said. It's to make sure that what has happened in the past in respect of insurance in the financial sector doesn't happen again. So that's, for us, we feel very strongly that this prudential regulation is critical. So it's sort of the whole purpose of the bill is to strengthen
that. Yeah, we understand. Okay, fine. Can we move on then to part two? We're looking at 5.1. That's straightforward. Right, 5.2.
The purpose of 5.2 is sort of to ensure that if you conduct business onshore here, even conducting it through an intermediary means business conducted here, and which means you're subject to this legislation.
Okay, any questions here, comments? Can I just ask you to remind us, what in essence does a Financial Advisory and Intermediary Services Act do?
my other job. It's the piece of legislation that governs advice and intermediary services of an entire range of financial products, one of which is insurance. So anybody... So it would be securities and investment instruments, it would be administration of assets, it would be pension, benefits, so any financial product as defined, anybody who renders advice or intermediary services on it falls under this Act, so therefore anybody in this insurance bill who gives advice directly, for example, or intermediates directly would also be covered by FAS, where brokers would be independently covered under the FAS Act.
Sorry, Momo.
It's quite an important act, and in fact, though it precedes my time in this unit, when it came, when was it, in 1990, 2000? You know, before then, you had all your brokers and so on tended not to be regulated at all. So this is the act that really brought in financial providers, service providers, brought in the brokers and everyone. So it's quite a piece of legislation, historic piece of legislation, I would say.
If I can add, Chair, it's a purely market conduct piece of legislation. It's not prudential in any way.
Then sub 3, what does this mean?
I think it's just sort of not to inadvertently catch somebody that's performing an outsourced activity on behalf of an insurer, to capture them as being subject to this piece of legislation. So for instance, if somebody outsources claims management to a person, basically that claims management is part of what constitutes insurance business, but you don't want that person to come and register as an insurer.
Oh.
So that's basically just what we were trying to facilitate there.
You're not wanting to register or she to register, but there may be other things that the person is required to do that an insurer is, because if you outsource, to some extent they're independent, but to some extent they're also accountable. They can't do things and then say, oh, well, I'm not bound by the legislation.
Currently, we have quite an extensive directive on outsourcing that applies to insurers and holding insurers accountable for the conduct of persons to whom they outsource. And going forward, there will also be a dedicated prudential standard dealing with outsourcing. And in a number of instances, those people to who they outsource would be registered under the FASE Act, where they are
essentially... Under the FASE Act, that's right. So that covers it, right? Because there has to be some conduct that they are bound legally and in terms of regulations and norms by, because they're acting on behalf of the insurance agency, right?
But not all... most of the people insurers outsource to are FSBs registered under FASE, but that's not necessarily a given rule. But we impose the obligations on the insurer, and what the FSR bill has also given us authority to is to impose standards directly on them, and that we can also do on-site inspections at those entities to ensure that the conduct is appropriate and proper.
So we're adopting that sub 4.
Sub 4 is basically saying insurers may not, without the approval of the authority, conduct any business other than insurance business in the Republic, including business they perform on behalf of another person. And that is currently insurers do pension benefit administration, do asset management, etc., and they do that within the same legal entity. And we feel that those other activities hold risks to the insurance business, and going forward we want to be able to assess what the risks of those other businesses is before allowing them to do so. There has been a number of objections to that, but we do feel that as a regulator, we feel very strongly that we should be approving it if they want to do pension benefit administration or asset management or any other activity other than what their primary purpose is to do insurance.
Right, just explain what the objections are so everybody remembers.
So they feel that they should, as now, be able to conduct those types of businesses.
And that's ASISA, Hollard, PPS, right? Three of them.
Hollard's one is the same. Hollard was basically saying if you perform a function on behalf of another insurer, they should be able to do that, and it's still outsourcing, and other business that we would want to be aware of and approve. PPS was a little bit of a different issue. I think that they sort of, it's that same issue like, does insurance business include intermediary services rendered in respect of the insurance? So we just clarified to say FASE stays, and people that conduct activities regulated by FASE will continue to be regulated there.
Any comments here? Yes, my friend.
Sorry, Chair, I just want to go back to the point earlier.
Your name, I don't know. It's Joanne and you are?
Caroline.
Sorry, Caroline.
So it was just the point you made earlier regarding the intentions of the bill and the financial crisis of 2008. And if you consider that one of the world's largest insurers failed because it was doing derivative business rather than insurance business, it protects that kind of activity.
No, you see, the thing is, I fully agree with you. I'm sure most of us in the industry
will. And maybe the DA too. We agree with you, but we have to do our job, and people have to be heard. right? So the idea here is not because any one of us is sympathetic to these stakeholders. It's just that they came and made public submissions. We can't put it on the shelf. They have to be heard. Sahia, Asisa, you want to say something? Because you asked for...
Mr. Chair, basically the explanation is accepted. The only remaining concern is that in some instances, in most instances you'll find that a separate investment company has in fact been set up that is independently licensed, which is fine. But conceptually, and the insurer, where those assets are its own assets, the concern would be that now there is a constraint on an insurer managing its own property, its own assets, because it issues a policy, say, to a pension fund or issues a policy to an individual. Now it's not allowed to manage that which it owns without a license to do so. So that was, but in most cases you find that the insurer in any event has a separate subsidiary or within the group a separate asset manager that is separately licensed.
More to add to that, Chair, I guess, because this will also cover what you do in another country.
Subsection 5 is where you...
So they operate in Mozambique or Zambia. Generally, they do it through a company, a separate company, that wouldn't apply, but...
On a branch basis, they will.
Yeah, if it's a branch, so Sanlam operating in Zambia as Sanlam in South Africa would then have to provide notice.
And currently, that's also, it's not a current requirement. And I think we were not concerned about necessarily our insurance companies establishing a foothold in Africa, but what we had found that they were establishing branches in not so tax compliant jurisdictions, and that we were not aware of that. So going forward, if they want to create a branch elsewhere, they will have to have our approval.
All right. Fine. 6A and Roman numeral 1 and 2, so 6A. I don't think there's any issue here, really. Is there? Has anybody raised anything?
Yeah, no, but I just want to highlight, on the 10th of May, one of the issues that was raised was also the powers of the registrar, powers of the regulator.
Yeah.
So what we did with 6 was basically to crystallize the considerations that will fit at the discretion of the regulator here. So we've just had additional criteria that must be considered before they can act.
Members have seen it, right? And we're fine with this. All right, fine. Then can we move on to 6? Move on to 7? Are we in 7 now?
Yes. I just want to... I've missed a comment.
Oh,
It was just Sahia requested that where we said that if you establish a branch outside of South Africa that you need our approval, that we exclude reinsurers there. And we agree with that because the same risks associated with insurers conducting business outside of South Africa does not necessarily arise in respect of reinsurers. So we have excluded them there.
Fine. Any comments here? No? Right. Okay, the next one then, we move on to the next page. Am I right? We're going to 8 now, are we? Or is it 7? 7, sorry.
So basically...
Yeah, that's straightforward really, right? It's an Act of Parliament 7A. 7B... You can exempt. That's the point I think Mr. Manny might have raised. Is that right? Or if they duplicate or overlap with, right? Any comments on 7B? Fine. Then 7C. I think 7C is straightforward. Right. The Prudential Authority may in 8 prescribe that, blah, blah, blah. Explain that. 8. Sub 8. Now, can we go back to 57A? Eskom Holdings raised some issues. We skipped that.
So, Eskom is basically saying that they have such...
Antonio, you're asleep there, my friend.
Yeah. They have such insurer that they should be excluded from the requirements now. Basically, disagree with that, and it links to the discussion about...
Yeah, fine. Let's move. But you disagreed with them that the bill should be revised to provide that it does not apply to the daily. Okay, fine, we agree with you, right, on that one, obviously, based on the earlier discussion. So can we then move on to B, 8 sub B, and we'll end at the part 3 and then at part 2. It's about time to close. So can we try to finish this before we leave? It's 8 B, Roman numerals 1 to 5.
Basically, where we want to include or exclude things, 8B sets the criteria that the Prudential Authority must consider in terms of making those calls.
Okay, can I ask a question? Does this in any way assist the transformation process? In other words, you are saying here that the this whole 8, right, that categories, types, kinds, etc., right? Is this a framework within which you can also create exemptions and exclusions from some of the onerous provisions while protecting policyholders for new emerging entrants?
So that would rather be under the exception clause. But I do think to an extent it can. So currently we're busy working on a policy paper to address funeral parlors and could actually create a regulatory framework for them in which they can function, because we feel they should have regulation, but maybe not the extent of insurance regulation. So once that, if that policy paper would have been in place and there's a different regulatory framework for them, what they would be doing is still insurance,
fine,
but we could probably facilitate things through this section.
Colleagues, can I suggest we don't adopt this, right? Because we will need to come back to it, because we may use this to actually make it clearer that we are allowing for exemptions, I keep repeating, without undermining the rights of policyholders and their needs and interests. So I don't think we should adopt this comment. Can I plead? Yeah.
No, it's okay, but bearing in mind that it's simply saying that the Prudential Authority, when making a standard, must have regard to. It's not precluding anything.
But the thing is that we might probably make it more explicit. I understand what you're
saying. There's no rush. This is like it's like almost bordering on a policy issue that I think we must look at carefully. Ismail?
Just to add also, I think also just the approach that we take is more one of proportionality than one of exclusion or exemptions, because remember we had a discussion even for the financial sector regulation bill, because these things, they go on forever.
I meant was, I'm not as sophisticated as you are, I meant proportionality. But I know what you're trying to say. And I think we should just park this off, because it may have implications, may not. We'll know at the end. 9 is straightforward to me, but hey, do you want to explain quickly, Joanne? And
I think it is important that one restricts the use of certain names.
Yeah.
But it just says the Prudential Authority can allow a person to use those names. We do find it quite a lot that we would have a FSP that wants to say it's an insurance broker. But we want to at least make sure that how they then carve their name or develop their name, that it doesn't imply that they're an insurer, and that when people
yeah.
engage with them, that people don't think they are dealing with an insurer, which it's not.
Any comments here? Good. We're closing here, but one quick announcement. You will recall in the transformation of financial sector hearings, the cooperatives were raising a lot of issues. We said, fine, let's have a specific focused sitting on cooperatives. So all the entities that were there in the hearings have been invited, right? And they will appear tomorrow, including the CBDA and so on. That's tomorrow. And then I will negotiate with the Speaker's office, with Cedric Frolic and whoever, and come back to you with one possibility, may I say, is we sit all day in the last week. But hey, we're sitting all day anyway for some of those days. So we look in that last week of the this quarter, but you will be informed, and the stakeholders through Alan, right? So we want to have a dedicated time. Or the first week when we come back is committee week, right? October? Yeah, we will have to focus a lot there and sit through the day and try to finish this thing. Thank you, everybody.